So Pastor had asked me to bring the devotional when it was brought up that he was going to be gone for this service as well, and Pastor Jeb had covering all of Sunday services. Pastor Wild didn't want to overburden him, so asked me to cover this, and it took me a little bit to think through what I really wanted to cover. So what I've got here, yes, it is 6 pages fine print, but that's because I want to stay on script, and I'm not very good at just kind of wandering about things. So if you have your Bibles, there's a lot of places to go. It'll all be on the screen, though, so you can just read it there. So the message tonight, what I wanted to speak on is stay by the stuff. And that's kind of where we're getting. It might not be where you think we're going, because it's very... it's very like stick to it and, you know, get to it, just, you know, hunker down and, you know, let's just keep doing it. That's not exactly where I'm going with this, but you'll see where we're going when we get there. I love words. I love English. English has a lot of amazing words. Stuff is one of them, and that's what we're going to look at. But another one that's amazing is the word fetch, a small little 5-letter word. I know you don't think about it a lot, but it means you go to that place where that thing is, get that thing, and then bring you and that thing back to here. That's a lot to say in one little word. Fetch is, and there are other words that are like that. English has a lot of words in it, and it's because we steal words from other places, as Pastor Jeb has mentioned many times, that English just kind of adopts other people's words for their own. But we're going to look at the word stuff. So here's some verses in the Bible that have the word stuff in it. In Genesis 31:37, whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, and what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This is the story where Rachel stole the family idols from Laban. He pursued them. She hid them on the camel and didn't get off because she said, it's the time of women for me, so I can't get down. And she kept those hidden. It's stuff. Where in my stuff is your stuff? Genesis 45:20, also regard not your stuff, for all the good of the land of Egypt is yours. This is when Joseph reveals that he is Joseph. And he says to his brethren, go get your father, go get your family, come to Egypt. There's food here, you're not going to starve. Don't worry about your stuff, because you will get everything that's here in Egypt. Exodus 22, verse 7, if a man shall deliver unto his neighbor money or stuff to keep, and it be stolen out of the man's house, if the thief be found, let him pay double. This is just a simple remuneration process. If a thief takes money, it's easy to double that. If he takes stuff, how do you double that stuff? You've got to work that out. He needs to pay double. Exodus 36, verse 7, for the stuff that they had was sufficient for the work to make it, and too much. This is building the tabernacles, collecting all the stuff that they need. They need the rods, they need the wood, they need the fabric, they need the gold, they need all these pieces to build this tabernacle that God has commanded them to make, and they have way too much stuff. They have enough stuff to make it happen. Joshua 7, verse 11, Israel hath sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them. For they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen and dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. This is when Achan was taking things from Jericho. They were told, all the gold, all the silver belongs to God. That's going to be purified in fire. The rest is going to be purified in fire by being burned, and it's going to be gone. So this was God's stuff that he stole. It wasn't just stuff from Jericho. And Samuel, 1 Samuel 10:22. Therefore they inquired of the Lord further if the man should come thither. And the Lord answered, behold, he hath hid himself among the stuff. This was Saul. This was the people of Israel said, we want to be a nation like everyone else. We don't want to just have God as our king. That we want to have our own king. And God said, okay, you're not going to like it, but I'll give you a king. And he picked Saul. And Saul, at this point in his life, he was a humble man. He was afraid to be king. He didn't want to be out there as the guy. So he was hiding among the stuff. So there were two that I skipped in the Old Testament. I skipped past them. They're in 1 Samuel. And the first one is 1 Samuel 25:31. And David said unto his men, gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men, and 200 abode by the stuff. Here David is, well, we're going to get into this, we're going to explain this one a little bit more, but this is where we're coming from. We're in the chronological period of where David is supposed to be king. He's going to become the king, and Saul is hunting for him, and he's got his band of mighty men. He's got 600 men with him, and they are avoiding Saul, and they are they're helping Israelites in other places, and we'll get into some of that that's going on. But when in this event, when David said, let's go, four of them went, and two of them, 200 of them, 400 went, 200 stayed by the stuff. 1 Samuel 3:24, for who will hearken unto you in this matter? But as his part is that goeth down to the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff. They shall part alike. Now these are fairly close in storyline together. You see that one is in Samuel 25 and one's in Samuel 30. They're not directly relating to the same event, but we're going to tie them together a little bit here in how some of them stayed by the stuff when David went out on a mission, and another time when some of them stayed by the stuff, and when they came back, it was decided that what they got was going to be split between all of them equally. So, going back to 1 Samuel 25, I want to read the whole passage, and I think I cropped out some of the verses, but most of them are here. Hopefully, you can read that. Starting in verse 5 of 1 Samuel 25, and David sent out 10 young men, and David said to the young men, go, get you up to Carmel, and go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus shall ye say to him that liveth in prosperity, peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house, and peace be unto all that thou hast. And now I have heard that thou hast shearers. Now thy shepherds, which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them while all the while they were in Carmel. Ask thy young men, and they shall show thee. Wherefore, let the young men find favor in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh into thine hand unto thy servants and to thy son David. So, I'll stop there for just a brief second. While David and his mighty men are hanging out in the wilderness, they're helping the people of Israel. And they, in this particular situation, they had been protecting these shepherds from any raiding bands of foreigners that might come through. They helped, and then later they come back, and David hears that he's got shearers, that Nabal's got shearers. And so he's asking Nabal, hey, we helped you out a whole lot when you were growing these sheep, and now you're shearing them. Can you provide something for us? Can you give us something, whatever? Oh, he says, whatsoever cometh into thine hand. Verse 9, and when David's young men came, they spake to Nabal according to all those words of in the name of David, and ceased. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, who is David, and who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants now that break away every man from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shearers and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told all those sayings. And David said unto his men, and this is the verse we read. So David just got the report back from Nabal. No, I'm not giving you anything. I don't even know who you are. I don't trust you at all. I'm not giving you anything. David said unto his men, gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword. And David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men, and 200 abode by the stuff. Continuing on in verse 14, but one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed on them. But the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, neither missed we anything. As long as we were conversant with them, when we were in the fields, they were a wall unto us both by night and day, and while we were with them keeping the sheep. David's men had helped this guy and had helped grow his flock and keep him from wandering off, because that's what sheep do. And they said, they told Abigail, they said, they came to us for help afterwards. They said, hey, what can you give? What can you provide for us? And our master, your husband, Nabal, he railed on them. Now therefore, verse 17, now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do. For evil is determined against our master and against all his household. For he is such a son of Belial that a man cannot speak to him. Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine and 5 sheep readily dressed and 5 measures of parched corn and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on asses. And she said unto her servants, go on before me. Behold, I come after you. But she told not her husband Nabal. And it was so as she rode on the ass that she came down by the covert on the hill and said, behold, David and his men came down against her and she met them. So David received, skipping ahead. That's another slide. That's right. So Abigail, she realizes that Nabal has screwed up royally. And so she puts together a gift for David's men and gets it sent to him and comes and meets him. And there's a longer conversation between them. She says, please don't come and kill my husband. Don't come wipe us out. Please, you know, be kind to me. We were not involved. We were not asked whether or not you were a good guy and whether we should help you. It's not our fault. Please don't be mad at us. And David, in verse 35, so David received of her hand which she had brought to him and said unto her, go up in peace to thine house. See, I have hearkened to thy voice and have accepted thy person. And in that passage that I didn't put in here is that he said thank you for this stuff and for stopping me, keeping me from wiping this moron off the face of the planet. They didn't use those words, but you get the point. So verse 36, and Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, so she went back home. And behold, he held a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunken. Wherefore she told him nothing, less or more, until the morning light. But it came to pass in the morning, when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And it came to pass about 10 days after that the Lord smote Nabal, and he died. And when David had heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be the Lord that hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and hath kept his servant from evil, for the Lord hath returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. And David sent and communed with Abigail to take her to him to wife. So in this story, we have that a band of David's men came with him. They all girded on their swords. They were ready for a slaying. They were going to wipe Nabal out. And Abigail came and stopped them. But only 400 guys came. The other 200 stayed by the stuff. They stayed back. They didn't come. Now, why? Because somebody's got to stay with the stuff. Someone's got to guard the home. Someone has to be there to watch the stuff, to stay with the stuff. So in this story, to sum it up, do what's right, God will sort it out. David was going to take it into his own hands to wipe out Nabal, but God took care of it for him. And they got what they needed. They got the supplies that they needed, and David gets a wife out of it. In between these passages, between where we are in 1 Samuel 25 and 1 Samuel 30, David picks up another wife, which isn't exactly preferred, but it's mentioned here because we deal with that his wives have been taken captive. So in 1 Samuel 30, it came to pass, when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south in Ziklag, and smitten Ziklag, and burned it with fire, and had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away, and went on their way. Just a little side note here, that's very untypical. When you come in and invade, you generally wipe a lot of people out just to do so. But they took them all alive, which is important later on. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire. Now, the first thing you're going to think is they killed everybody. But they find out, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. And David's 2 wives were taken captives. There they are. There's the both of them. Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the wife of Nabal, the Carmelite. Still calling her the wife of Nabal, but she's not anymore because he's dead. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. and Abiathar brought thither the ephod to David. And David inquired at the Lord, saying, "Shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them?" And he answered, "Pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all." So, verse 9, so David went, he and the 600 men that were with him, there they are again, there's the group, there's the band of David's men, the 600 that were with him, and came to the brook Bezor, where those that were left stayed behind. Where those that were left stayed behind. What? But David pursued, he and 400 men. Ah, there's that group again. 400, the same group that were ready to go wipe out Nabal. They were ready to go do David's bidding. 400 and 200. Maybe not the same ones. It could be a different group. But verse 10, continuing on. For 200 abode behind, which were so faint that they could not go over the brook Bezor. Maybe they just didn't have the energy. Maybe they were just so worn out. And you get worn out, especially from an incident where you just realize that your family's been taken captive. They've been hauled off by the bad guys. Yes, you've got God's blessing that if you go, you're going to overtake them. Yes, you've got the promise that you will recover what was taken. It doesn't stop you from being so physically tired you can't cross a river sometimes. So they couldn't cross the river, so they stayed behind with the stuff. And we get to that verse a little later. Verse 11, they found an Egyptian in the field, and there's a bit about this Egyptian. He was a servant of one of these, one of the people that was part of the raiding army that had came and sacked the city and taken the people. And when he had brought him down, behold, they were spread. So this Egyptian, he told them where to go. He brought them to him. He was a slave that had escaped, and so he didn't want to go back to his master, but he also didn't want to be killed. And so he said, "Don't kill me, and I'll show you where they went." And so this man brought them to where they had gone. And when he had brought him down, behold, they were spread abroad upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken out of the land of the Philistines and out of the land of Judah. This is the bad army. They're partying because they just sacked Ziklag and they've been on this raiding crusade collecting stuff and having a fun time doing it. Verse 17, and David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day. And there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men which rode on camels and fled. So he wiped them out. And none of them escaped except for, I don't know how many there were total. We'd have to do more context to find out. But 400 of the bad guys escaped. They hopped on camels and they took off. And they're gone. Verse 18, and David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away. And David rescued his two wives. And there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil. These Amalekites had been raiding other places. They brought supplies with them too. They're partying and having a great time. So there was nothing lacking. There was nothing lacking to them, neither great nor small, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil, nor anything that had been taken to them. David recovered all. And David took all the flocks and the herds which they drave before those other cattle and said, "This is David's spoil." And David came to the 200 men, which were so faint that they could not follow David, whom they had made also to abide by the brook Bezor. And they went forth to meet David, and to meet the people that were with him. And when David came near to the people, he saluted them. Then answered all the wicked men and men of Belial, of those that went with David. So we see in the 400 men that went with David, you know, some of them weren't so good. And in any bushel, you're going to have some bad apples, right? So of these men that went with David, they answered and they said, "Because they went not with us, we will not give them aught of the spoil that we recovered, save to every man his wife and his children, that they may lead them away and depart." They said, "You know what? You guys did not go with us to make this fight. You did not go with us to go get our stuff back, so you get nothing. You get nothing, Charlie. You don't get the... Anyway, sorry, that was in my head for some reason. You lose, right? According to like Willy Wonka, you broke the rules. The rules were you come with us and you'll get to be a part of it. So, but David said in verse 23, he said, "Ye shall not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord hath given us, who hath preserved us and hath delivered the company that came against us into our hand. For who will hearken unto you in this matter? But as his part is that goeth down to the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff, they shall part alike. And so it was from that day forward that he made a statute and an ordinance for Israel unto this day. Those guys that were too tired, that could not cross the river, a bunch of jerks said, you don't get anything. And David said, that's not right. You stay by the stuff, you still get the same part of the reward that everybody else gets. So what's the point? The whole point of this is that it's very easy to compare among each other. It's very easy to get discouraged. Maybe you're sitting there by the brook right now. You're sitting there and other people are going on. And they're doing other ministries. Or they are having great success in business or whatever it may be. And you look at that and you say, I don't know that I'm going to get the reward that they get. They're doing so much more than me. But that's not, we're not supposed to be comparing against each other. Bear with me, follow me through here. I've got some more to get there. Just want to get where we're going. In John 21, this is after the resurrection. Jesus has come back, and this is just after the point where Peter says, you know that I love you. And he says, do you really love me? And there's the word play back and forth, basically saying, do you love me? And he says, I like you. He says, do you love me? And he says, I like you. And he basically says, do you like me? And he says, do you know I love you? Anyway, verily, verily, I say unto you, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whither thou wouldest. And when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This spake he, signifying what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, follow me. Then Peter, turning about, seeing the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Peter just got through this emotional situation. And he says, Jesus tells him, you're going to die by being carried where you don't want to go. And he says, well, what about this guy? Really, Peter? That's what you're concerned about right now? But what about this guy? That even the disciples are doing this, comparing back and forth of, you know, who's doing better, who's going to get better, who's going to what? And Jesus said to him, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. Then went this saying abroad among the brethren that disciple should not die. Yet Jesus said not unto him, he shall not die, but if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? The point was, Jesus was making, it's none of your business what that guy's doing. It's none of your business what's going to happen to him. You follow me. That's what you do. You do what's right. You follow him. In 1 Corinthians 12, in verse 4, the Bible says, now there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are diversities of administrations, but the same Lord. And there are diversities of operations, but it is the same God that worketh all in all. Skipping to verse 12, for as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have been all made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear shall say, because I am not of the eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But God hath set forth the members, every one of them, in the body, as it hath pleased him. Verse 19, and if they were all one member, where were the body? But now are they many members, but yet one body. And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary, And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. I don't know if you see where I'm going here. Sometimes you're stuck at the river. And it's easy to think that you're uncomely. And that you're not good enough. But we're all one body. For our comely parts have no need. But God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now ye are the body of Christ, and members in particular. So what I'm trying to get at here, and I'm sure you've gotten there. Sometimes you're going to be Elijah on Mount Carmel. Sometimes you're going to be calling down fire from heaven and joking about God, the false god Baal, sitting on the toilet and laughing at the guys that are on the wrong side. Sometimes you'll be there, yes. Sometimes you're going to be Stephen standing before a crowd saying, "This man Jesus is who you crucified," and that crowd will stone you to death. Sometimes you will join David in his mighty band to go wipe a moron off the face of the planet. But sometimes you'll be too tired to cross the river. Sometimes you will stand by your best friend. Now, I didn't get into anybody in particular. I didn't even mention the name. I didn't want to bring it up until we got here. But his name, one of those guys that went with David, his name was Uriah. He was one of his mighty men, Uriah the Hittite. So sometimes you will stand by your best friend and you will go and you will rescue your family. You will go and you will accomplish mighty and great things for God. And sometimes that best friend will stab you in the back by stealing your wife and having you murdered. Sometimes that will happen. But the end result, your job, our job, my job, is to glorify God, and the reward will be the same. You might not be able to make it across the river. You might be too tired. You might have to just stay by the stuff for now. And that's what we get in that passage. As his part is that goeth down to the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff. They shall part alike. Right now, you might be stuck by the river, but you will have the same part. If you are doing what God has asked you to do, if you are doing everything you can, you should not be discouraged when you see others going on to other things, to doing greater things. You're by the stuff, you just stay there, and the reward will come. They will all part alike. So let me encourage you, and this was an encouragement for me. Stay by the stuff. Stay by the stuff. Yes, be the motivated go out and getter. You can put that emphasis on there. But maybe right now you just need to stay by the stuff, by the river. Just stay there.